Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Kickstarter Spotlight episode, and it's also one of our special holiday 12 days of the Comic Source episodes. So today we're going to be talking about a Kickstarter campaign. We only have a little bit of time left to join the campaign. It's almost at its end, and I want to welcome Brian Hawkins and Richard Kemp, the two creators who are running this campaign. And being that it's their first time on the show, as you listeners know, we always want to get their secret origin and hear how they got into comics. So we'll start with you, Brian. Were comics a part of your childhood? Like, was it a big thing for you? How did you start on your comic journey here?
My comic journey. So yeah, comics, cartoons, storytelling, huge part of my childhood, even from like sitting on a couch with my mom, watching soap operas, to Saturday morning cartoons, to going to the comic book store, buying the comics, buying the trading cards, the action figures, the whole nine. Really got into it as a professionally aspiring to be a professional, at least in 2012. I was already out of college into the career of teaching. So I kind of just began my journey to being a comic book writer, and I've been on that path ever since. Some freelance writing with Black Box, with Zenoscope, more so recently, and doing a lot of editing with Mad Cave, and fortunate to link up with my man Richard here and start this creator-owned indie project, Don't Ever Blink.
So were there any particular books or titles or characters that drew you in when you were a kid? What were you into?
Well, I was definitely into like the superheroes, Wolverine, Spider-Man, Superman. My favorite superhero is Batman, a huge Batman fan. So I really followed suit with those. It was more so in my adult years that I've fallen in love with indie comics, and I definitely read indie more than I read Marvel and the DC now. You know, there's select titles that I have that I follow with those. But I'm way more into the indie comics.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff out there. And you get, here's the thing, right? Like, we say this all the time, you get a creator who's passionate and they're having fun doing what they're doing, that comes across on the page, and you can really see that. And, you know, unfortunately, indie comics, a lot of times the creators, they just get a bigger piece of the pie. So, you know, it's a better deal for them. It fuels their excitement. They're not working on a character where, you know, like, let's face it, Batman's cool and Superman's cool. Wolverine's great. But so many stories have been told with those characters already. It's hard sometimes not to repeat things. So yeah, indie. We cover a lot of indie stuff on here. Obviously, you know, Kickstarter Spotlight to shine a spotlight, especially on more diverse creators like yourself. So yeah, we cover a ton of indie, and there's a lot of great stuff out there. What about you, Richard? How did you get your start? Were you into comics as a kid? What's your journey like?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably talk about just this topic for an hour. My brother is 8 years older than me, and he was into comics from, you know, so when I was born, you know, he was already, you know, he already had a pretty good collection. Mm-hmm. And I still have a lot of those. So just as kids, we would play with toys. We would make up our own stuff. I remember we probably destroyed something. We would get our mom to cut out the characters out of the comic books and play with them.
Oh, wow.
And who knows? It was probably Spider-Man number one or something. You know what I mean? Just something terrible that we cut to shreds so we could play with it. And I've always been drawn to drawing. I literally can remember drawing before I could read. So it just all fell into place. I've always wanted to do it. I was in college for time where, you know, I didn't want to necessarily draw like Jim Lee. And unless I moved to New York or Portland, I wasn't getting a job anyways. And so, you know, you just kind of still fantasize about it and it's in the back of your head. And then like Brian too, around 2012, I said, you know what, man, I'm just going to start doing it. Technology made it easier. I do almost everything digitally now and it all just sort of fell into place and I met some people and, you know, met some more people and then met some more after that. And then, you know, here I am with Brian and, you know, we hit it off right away. I mean, yeah, I grew up with the X-Men. You have Moon Knight on your wall. If there's one Marvel property that I could write and draw, I would do Moon Knight all day long. He's one of the few that doesn't have, you know, every story possible told about.
Right.
Him.
Yep.
You know, but yeah, I got frustrated in the early 2000s and that's when I discovered Hellboy and Sin City and, you know, those books. And I said, oh, okay. You know, and it just, it's like, here we are, you know, we're telling stories, you know? So anyways, that's the journey. And here I am, Brian and I met, hit it off with what we want to do. And that's it. That's my journey. It's really just beginning at 45.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you guys are both a perfect example. You're doing the things that you need to do. You know, we always talk on the show, we have, you know, big creators that come on that have made it. And they say, if you want to be a writer, then write. You know, if you want to be an artist, then yep. Draw,
yep.
You know, they talk all the time about, yeah, I have these fans, they come up and they say, yeah, I want to break in. I want to be a comic book writer. Well, what have you written? What do you have to show me? Well, you know, I really haven't, you know, found the right idea. It's like, man, if you want to make comics, then make comics. It's never been easier. You know, Mark Silvestri will tell you, he tells a story all the time. He's like, yes. Man, it was hard when I was breaking in. I had to travel to conventions and whatever. He's like, it's never been easier to get your stuff out there. You know, the internet makes it easy. You draw, you put it out there.
Never.
You can make webtoons, you know, that's a great platform. You can create stuff. Kickstarter's another one. So no excuses. And you guys are taking that to heart. So kudos to you for that, for sure.
That's right.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. That's exactly it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the campaign. Brian, do you want to let everybody know what Don't Ever Blink is about? The campaign that's running now is for chapter 2 of 5. So you've already run one successful Kickstarter for chapter 1. So why don't you let our listeners know what the story is all about?
All right. So Don't Ever Blink is a horror comic. We're in chapter 2, our issue 2 of a limited 5-issue series. And it's basically the log line would be after a serial killer who sews the eyelid shut of victims attacks Tinsley Marissa Grace, the sole survivor of a massacre. She's now out searching for answers as to why she survived. And so what chapter 2 explores is the aftermath of survival and the remorse that comes with that and the questions that's surrounding it. On top of that, we have the detectives, the police, trying to figure out what's going on with the serial killer who has now returned after being absent for over a year.
And what made you, you know, you were talking about how you were into to superheroes as a kid. What made you decide that when you did a project on Kickstarter, you were going to tell a horror story, you were going to go that direction?
So my, I do have a love for superheroes. I have, dare I say it, a stronger affinity for horror. I love slashers. I love mystery. I love that psychological aspect. And I've always wanted to write a horror comic. I flirted around with a slasher screenplay and so forth and so on, like on spec. But you know, when I began my comic book journey, you know, that was one of the things I really wanted to do was a horror comic. And Don't Ever Blink kind of just, you know, just vacillating, ruminating, you know, inside of me. And when I linked up with Richard and I shared with him the idea, he and I just began to like build on that idea and build out that concept, and he brought it all to life. And it's just been magic ever since.
Yeah. Now Richard, you know, Brian brings you this idea, and right away, you know, being, and maybe you're not, because you mentioned, you know, writing and illustrating, but being more visual in storytelling, did you start to see the world right away and the characters that inhabited that world? Was it kind of like lightning in a bottle for you?
It was. I mean, immediately. Well, just, you know, he said horror and we talked a little bit. And then when he said, you know, sewing eyelids shut, I mean, just immediately it started, you know, doing that. And then we talked about the characters and the characters involved. And yeah, I mean, I had no problem, you know, sort of conceptualizing the people in this world. It was pretty great. It was pretty great. Cause it was very much a, yes, it's a horror story, but it's also a police drama. It's also, and so those are things that I like to do, you know, the more noir, you know, like I said, Sin City had a really big effect on the type of comics I wanted to make. And this fit perfectly into that. So yeah, lightning in a bottle is definitely how I feel about it.
And then once you started conceptualizing and coming up with characters, designs and stuff, talk us through that process. What was that collaboration like? Were you coming up with ideas, showing them to Brian, and then he was given notes, or were you kind of out on your own? What was the process?
So maybe Brian will remember it differently. I mean, he basically gave me their names and their jobs. And I drew, what came, you know, what felt right. And there were a few visual things that he cued me on, but nothing super specific. And so I just drew what seemed right. And I don't think we had to change it too much. You know, I went and found I thought of each character and I kind of went and found somebody who reminded me of that character. So, you know, Denzel Washington in Training Day and Rosa Diaz on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, it just, you know,
I see that.
So yeah.
I see
that. I mean, it's just cool. Kind of, yeah.
So yeah, Brian, when just, you,
it wasn't hard.
And Brian, when you saw these characters in this world start to come to life, was it how you picture it in your head? Were you and Brian like, are you and Richard rather on the same wavelength?
Definitely on the same page. Like I use the word simpatico with him all the time because it seems like we just, like I'm here and boom, he's there. And it's like, boom. Love those sound effects. Like there, boom, boom. I speak how I write scripts. But for real, it was really that special. I use examples where like, so I script and I'm not really specific with like the character design. There's an idea out there, but it's very important, at least for me as a comic writer, to make sure that it's an open world for the artists to bring it to life, you know, to work their magic, you know, to put that side of creativity and birth the actual project. So when I got to see the look of Tinsley, the main character, you know, she was spot on. You know, we talk about mood, like a B movie feel, slasher, horror, and you know, from the colors to character concept, to how he did the blood, like it all fits that mood. And that's him bringing to life this vastness that was like swirling around in my head. And when I went to edit the scripts and going back through the scripts and rewriting some things, what's interesting is that, you know, where it started off as this blank image of Tinsley, like not formed. I knew it, but I didn't have it formed. Mm-hmm. Once he drew the concepts, guess what happens? When I'm rewriting, I see his concepts. You know, I now have a form, and that changes the writing process, the rewriting process, the editing process, because you're now not processing that data through images that you're creating. You know, you're now processing all that data through images and concepts that your co-creator has provided and birthed himself. So it was an amazing process, and it continues to be so. So it's cool.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it makes it more concrete, like you're saying. But I imagine, you know, as a writer, you know this, you always want to, you know, leave yourself room for the story to grow organically, you know, to make changes. Oh, you know, turns out as I'm writing it, I think they would actually do this or do that. I have to imagine that once you saw Richard's, you know, characters and you know, they've kind of come to life, that you find that to be even more true, right? There's more like creative juices flowing, more excitement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the rewrites, like, you know, several times, like throughout issues 1 through 5, like, you know, I'm rewriting and editing, and, you know, what he's done, and the fact that we are collaborating, you know, affects the writing. Like, I know, especially in issue 5, like, you know, within the scripts, you know, there are parts where I'm talking to Richard. I say, you know, note to Richard. And I say, you know, and I try to draw his attention back to issue 3. I say, hey, Richard, remember in issue 3 when you did this? And I've actually gone back and looked at the artwork from like issue 1 and 2 and say, in panel XXX, you know, I'm not going back and looking at the script saying XXX, I'm going back and looking at the panel.
Right.
So the collaboration, you know, with, you know, is right there. And we're actually, you know, at times having a conversation within the script. So it's cool. It's real cool.
Now, Richard, obviously this is a horror comic, and you know, people think horror, you know, Brian's talking about, you know, slasher and blood and this and that, and those things can be terrifying and they can be scary. But part of the reason that horror films do so, we kind of like to be scared. It's kind of fun, right? So there's always got to be a level
right,
little bit of tongue in cheek, a little bit of fun, even though it's scary. So how do you convey that?
Yeah.
When you're being visual, how do you make it, you know, don't make it too dark, don't make it too scary, don't make it too bloody, still keep that kind of fun concept. How do you do that visually?
That is so well too. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a great question. I want some scholarly answer. A lot of it has been instinct.
Mm.
A lot of it has been listening, if you will, to Brian and what he's looking for. Brian, his scripts do a great job of pacing and he's really thought out page turns, you know, what's going to happen when you turn the page. So I haven't tried to over analyze what he's doing. And then, you know, probably movies, you know, I think of scenes in movies that did it for me and try to, you know, go with that. And I do want it to come off more as a chilling type thing and not so much a bloodbath type thing. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know. And hopefully that's working. That's a good question, and I don't have a great answer, because luckily the things I've put on paper so far have just kind of worked out pretty well. And when I'm drawing something and it's not, you know, I'll mull over it and I go, I don't really like that, but blah blah blah, and you know, 2 hours or 2 days later I'm like, what am I doing? That sucks. I've got to go back and redo that panel or that, you know, thing. And so I think you know, knowing what Brian's vision is, knowing how, kind of finally being comfortable in what my sort of vision is, knowing what we want to accomplish. And it's all just luckily falling into place, I guess. Well, you know, I wish there was a more technical answer, but.
No, I think the first thing you said is probably the most true. You know, it's instinct at this point. You know, you mentioned before when you were talking about how when you and Brian first got together, you started working, that's how much fun it was. So even though it's scary,
right,
you know, it's chilling. If you're having fun and you're enjoying what you're doing, I think even though it's horror, that's probably, you know, coming out on the page.
I hope so. Cause I am having a lot of fun. I know Brian is too. And so far, so have the readers. So, you know, we're going to try to keep that energy up for five issues.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, cause I wanted to ask about the campaign for issue one. Obviously this is issue two. Issue one, you know, had a successful campaign. And what was the reaction like? Were the backers really happy with the story? Did you get a lot of good feedback?
Yeah, we have, like, all the feedback that we've received. And I would say it's been, you know, from a Kickstarter campaign, this is the most that I've seen people post, like receiving their awards, like making comments, retweeting. You know, we have some things that's on the Kickstarter page, from comments to messages, you know, and everything is very positive. And, you know, they speak to, like, they really hit on what our goal was, our vision for Don't Ever Blink was, and they're really speaking to that. So if there are any backers who did not like the story, they haven't vocalized it. They haven't verbalized, excuse me. They haven't been vocal at all. The only thing that we've heard back from backers is that they have enjoyed it and they've gotten what the story is about and they want more. So that's, you know, that's energy for us. That's positive energy that we're definitely trying to take with us into the next chapter.
Yeah. And so, you know, I do want to mention to all the listeners, you know, this isn't always the case when we spotlight something, but don't ever blink the second issue. It's already fully funded. So, you know, if you go and back the campaign, you're for sure going to get it. It's not going to be one of those situations where you back it and maybe you get it, maybe you don't. So, but there are only a couple days left. It ends at 6:10 in the morning Pacific time on Friday, December 18th, this Friday. So you have a couple more days by the time this is released to go and check out the campaign. Obviously there'll be a link in the show notes, or you can just search on Kickstarter for Don't Ever Blink, or Google search Don't Ever Blink Kickstarter, and you'll be able to find it. So we know you're going to get it. Now that you are on the second issue, did this one fund quicker? Like, do you have more backers? Are you having returning backers? Like, how do you feel the campaign has gone the second time? Was it any easier? Why don't you take that one, Richard?
you know, we've talked about this a lot. The second one was not easy. We started off on fire and then it hit a wall, and that's where we stuck. And we did fund, and we're happy with where we're at, and we have a ton of backers. And when you compare, like when you compare to other Kickstarters, I feel really good about where we're at. I think that we did the two campaigns for one and two really close together. We started it for reasons that were sort of out of our control the week of Thanksgiving or right before Thanksgiving. I think there were just a lot of factors that sort of played into it not being, not having as many backers as we had on the first one. But I think everyone also knows we've made it kind of clear that you're going to always be able to go back and get all the issues. Brian, a friend of mine today, said he can't do it right now. But, you know, when we do the next one after Christmas, he's going to be able to go back and do it. Right. So I think there's some of that out there. I also think, like Brian said, the feedback we've gotten is really good. But I'm not crazy to think that 100% of everyone thought it was the greatest story they've ever read. I mean, that's just, you know, those people are wrong, but, you know, it's also possible that somebody just didn't like it. But I think, honestly, I think the time of year is something, you know, these Kickstarters like this, Brian and I are learning as we go along. And we did a few things differently in the campaign that we did in the first one. So we're going to take what worked, what didn't work, and hopefully the third one will feel a little more comfortable. So that's the answer. I'm sure Brian's got something to contribute to that, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, he hit the nail on the head with everything. You know, I really don't have anything to add. We're going to be prepared for the next chapter and go from there. The great thing is that, you know, we're both committed to chapter 1 through 5. And Richard is such a yeoman at this, where, you know, issue 2 is already finished and he's already working on chapter 3. So it is a guarantee that you're going to get this book. And we've also proven that, you know, we deliver. You know, we had a quick turnaround that worked to our advantage some, but then I think because of the timing, did not, but you're definitely going to get your book. I guess I did have stuff to add.
just like a writer. I don't have anything.
Just like a writer.
I got nothing.
Dang it.
But you know, it's what I love about talking to you guys. So, you know, like I was saying earlier, you want to be an artist, then draw. You want to be a writer, right? And you guys understand that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what comes across is you guys know you don't know everything, you know? And that comes with, you know, I always can improve and evolve as an artist. It comes from saying, you know, I want to be a better writer. I want to keep writing. And it's the same with the campaign. You know, maybe you guys could have done some things differently on the second campaign, made it a little easier on yourself. And you're going to take that into the next one like that. That's important. Correct. You know, don't be so arrogant and think, man, you know, I put my Kickstarter out there. I did what people told me and it didn't work. So I'm just going to give up. You know, you always got to be willing to put in the hard work and to learn and to evolve and, you know, do better the next time, you know?
That's right. That's right.
So why don't we go over some of the tiers? Because, you know, Richard, you did mention that if people can't, you know, back this time of year or whatever, holidays, you know, campaign 3, you'll still be able to come back and get previous issues. I did notice there is a tier in here where if you didn't back and didn't, you know about don't ever blink for the first issue, there is a tier where you can, you know, get the first issue. So Brian, why don't you let us know what some of the tiers are? What are some of the rewards that people can get in the
Kickstarter? Absolutely. So we have chapter 1, issue 1 there in PDF. We have it in book form. 1 and 2, of course. 1 is cool because you'll still get the Tim Daniel cover that he did for us, which, you know, we're still kind of just like, oh, Tim Daniel did that. So yeah. You can still, it's so cool. So you can still get that. Let's see, we have the mini poster that you can get. And we have a couple special items that I'll let Richard speak to that, you know, really hinges on his work and our graphic designer's work as well. Take it away, Rich.
Yeah, so I think the sketch cards are sold out, I believe, but that is, I am going to draw you, whoever the 5 people are that bought that, I'm going to do my best to draw you being attacked by the killer, which we thought was a pretty cool way to sort of get people involved. I believe there's 1 more left. You can get, you will send us your photograph and Jerry Nielsen, our graphic designer, is going to sew your eyes shut for you. And then you're going to get printed in the book. You'll go in the book. And if you look, he did Brian and I as a sample and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty chilling. So I think there's still 1 of those left. So, you know, the sketch card is going to be fun. I'm going to draw you getting attacked. Jerry's going to sew your eyes shut. You know, we've got what I think is a pretty cool little poster. The front page news, we're going to do sort of a printout of a news article of the killing, you know, that you can hang on your wall. So I think we're trying to do some different sort of things than your typical rewards too, you know. You know, it's almost 2021, man. We can push the limits of stuff.
Yeah, that sketch card idea is really cool. Yeah, I was.
I'm really excited. I can't wait to start getting some pictures so I can start sketching people getting. I don't know yet. I don't know.
It's gonna be cool. It's gonna be cool. There's that one out there though, the one that will make us both have more work to do. The what if reward that, you know, I would love for someone to what they call super backers, maybe. Like, I would love for someone to say, you know, wait, throw out this $500 tier and I will write you up that 8-page short with you starring in the role in a what if don't ever blink role, and Rich is going to draw it. I would love to see what that will look like. So if there's a backer out there interested, you know, we're looking to be hired.
And I would say definitely on the next campaign, keep those kind of, you know, the pie in the sky ones, because you never know what could happen. And yeah, hopefully we'll see the return of the sketch cards as
no,
well.
No, you don't. And
I
do think I love the idea of.
Sorry, you cut out there, Richard. Go ahead.
Maybe we lagged. I think that someone somewhere will be interested in that comic, short comic starring themselves, just not at Christmas time, you know. But we still got 3 more issues, you know. There's still a chance.
That's true. What if?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you guys will take what you learned, you know, this time, take it into the next one. And then I imagine when all 5 issues are done, you know, you probably do one for a collected edition where you can add in some back matter and, you know, maybe do hardback.
That is correct.
That sort of thing. So, let me ask you, Brian, we haven't talked that much about, the character in the story. You know, we've kind of talked about the tone of the story a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk a little bit about Tinsley herself. Where did you pull the inspiration? Like, is she pulled from people in your own life? Or did you look within to kind of give her personality? What was your inspiration? And give us an idea of what her personality is like.
So Tinsley, okay, so I'll start with this. I am a huge, 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 huge Scream fan. I love Scream. I will actually say that Scream is my favorite horror slasher franchise. So there's definitely an element of Sydney Prescott there, even to the point of her being a brunette. However, her character, she's not... I would say, you know, what's most comparable is kind of the internal torture in questioning of herself, the questioning of why and how, and with this one specific tragic event where she's placed within a massacre, how that massacre unfolds, how it basically destroyed her life. So she's a tragic character. And so what I went to with that was some of that Sidney Prescott, but also, you know, just diving into, you know, that human condition of pain and suffering. And it's almost kind of Shakespearean of like, oh man, this is what this girl has to experience. And the fact that she has to wear it, on her eyes, you know, the windows to the soul, where, you know, the scarring is there for her, on her eyes for her to see, you know, the things that she see out of is scarred. So that's kind of reflective, and symbolic of what's going on inside of her. So that's Tinsley. And the irony of that is that her last name is Grace, which does hold some meaning, you know, just a little play on words. So.
Yeah. And I, we're going to wind up here because I don't want to take up too much of your guys' time, especially around the holidays. But one last question for you, Richard. You did mention earlier about, you know, being a fan of the horror genre. But you also, you know, you mentioned Sin City and kind of the crime noir aspect and, you know, police procedural. So where are you, do you enjoy doing like are we going to see police cars? Are we going to see, you know, the those kind of settings that we expect to see in those kind of stories? And do you like drawing that kind of stuff? Or are you more enjoy drawing the characters and the anatomy and the, you know, the emotion and the drama and that sort of thing? Where does your proclivities lie?
Another great question, by the way. Yes, it doesn't intimidate me to draw police cars. I've been drawing them. I can draw that stupid Dodge Challenger with my eyes closed now. I've been drawing them for years because of the genre.
Right.
But Brian, and I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of rain. There's a lot of different vehicles. And, you know, I was intimidated. I'm not going to lie, but now that I'm working on them in issue 3, I am enjoying the challenge a great deal. I think I'm still new enough at this that I'm enjoying the challenges that come my way. Mm-hmm. In 10 years, I might be a little more salty about this. Like, Brian, can we do a whole book about people just having a conversation? And, you know, having a Zoom meeting where there's 3 squares on each page with 3 people's faces.
Write it down right now.
Yeah, then yeah, well, you know what? I've talked to artists about that, and they say actually those are the most challenging because those are the ones that are hardest to keep interesting visually when it's just a bunch of people.
They are, and it's actually my favorite thing when someone can do that. I saw Mac Chater today on social media post a picture of a guy rubbing his eye, and it was beautiful because it looked like a guy rubbing his eye. I mean, it's just when you can pull it off, it is, you know, it's magical. I mean, it's true. Because of the type of story that this is, I think that facial expressions and body language is super important to the story. So I'm really trying to pull that off. And I'm really trying, I want people to look at my work too and go, oh, holy crap, that looks like a guy who's having a stressful day. You know, so yes to both. Like, I enjoy both and I like the change up. I mean, you're absolutely right. If I really had to draw 20 pages of 3 guys talking to each other, it would be, I would rather, you know, slam my head against the wall than do that. So to go every couple pages to a police car, then people talking, then, you know, it's actually a lot of fun.
To exercise those artistic muscles.
Rain is terrible though.
Yeah, you know, sure. Somebody else that you know, looking at your style and from the Kickstarter campaign and such, somebody else that I'm thinking about now as we talk about it, and I've had this exact same conversation with him about Talking Heads, and he did a series called Thief of Thieves with Andy Diggle. He was on it from the beginning.
Oh yeah,
and, Sean Martinborough. And he talked about always having to move the camera. Talking about, I don't remember the issue number, but we're talking about one specific issue number with the two main characters. And it's like 3 or 4 pages of them talking. He goes, I just kept swinging the camera around the room because I literally couldn't do anything else. They're having this long conversation. You know, what else can you do?
Yeah. Well, you know, Martinborough is a master at this. I wouldn't draw where I am if I hadn't have found his book 10 years ago. You know, he takes that noir style to the next level, and two people talking is a lot of what happens in those stories. And so he has a book, and I can never remember the name of it, but it's teaching you how to draw noir. And it changed it. It taught me everything about how I wanted to draw. So it's cool that you brought that up because that guy is important for me. You know, and that's exactly right. You just kind of move the camera and, you know, you can do little tricks. I mean, people, we're not just staring at each other's faces right now. You know, we have little quirks and we kind of look off and we, you know, rub our face, and you just kind of have to think about that stuff to make it more interesting for yourself and the reader.
Yeah, that's really cool. I can't believe that you read Sean's book and took inspiration from it. And I actually pulled that from your art. So I guess it's true. You did great. Actually learn something.
That's awesome.
That's cool. That's so cool.
That's really great.
That is, that actually is, wow.
that's awesome. Cool.
Dan, if we're ever at a show and the three of us, you know, meet Sean and yourself, I'll be happy to introduce you. Sean's a really nice guy, super intellectual very analytical about the medium and really fun to talk to for sure.
I bet. Oh, man. Yeah.
Well, again, I really appreciate it, guys. This was even on short notice, and then I had some things go on today, and Richard and Brian were nice enough to push back on a very short notice. So I really appreciate that. Congratulations on getting the Kickstarter funded. Best of luck, having even more backers in last couple of days here, and best of luck in the future for number 3, 4, and 5. So as we wind down here, why don't you let everybody know if you're on social media where they can follow you and see some of your work? We'll start with you, Brian.
Yes, I'm in the Twitterverse at Brian L. Hawkins and IG mostly, Brian_Lewis_IM. Those are the two social platforms I'm most active on. I do have a Facebook page, Brian Hawkins Writes, where I post stuff as well.
Okay, and how about you, Richard?
I am RF Kemp 462 on all platforms. Anywhere you can think of, go if there's a place to post art in the world, you can find me under that name on that website. And if I'm not there, let me know so I can put it there.
Sounds good. And everybody, I'll put links to Brian and Richard's Twitter and Instagram in the show notes, along with that link to the campaign as well. Just a reminder. So you can go there if you're having trouble finding them, and give them a follow on social media. Back the campaign. And when you get the book in your hands, let them know what you think. It sounds like they love to hear from their backers. Already built a community for this book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. So it was a pleasure having you two on. Thanks again. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, all that good stuff. And to you listeners, thanks for listening as always. That's going to do it for this episode. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.